So I had a teacher in college, and I don't know why, but she had this overhead projector, and I only went to college like 4 years ago, so it wasn't like it was forever ago. She'd use an overhead projector to show stuff up on the thing, not like a fancy computer setup, but like the real clear sheets and everything. And she would stand in front of it, and it was quick faded, and she would go like this, and she would talk to us the whole time. The only warning is occasionally when I get excited, I talk really fast. So feel free to just remind me to slow down. You can do a simple signal like that or whatever. But I get pretty excited about this stuff, so it's just kind of, it could happen. And then also, I've been wanting to do this. The next time I did a presentation, I said I was going to do it. If you have any questions or think of things any later or during the talk or anything, just at JDataMaker. And then I can see it and I can get to it later, and it might be easier than knowing all that kind of stuff. And then at MongoDB, if you see stuff and you like it, they have a really, really cool team. And they would probably love to hear anything that you want to say to them. So, and they have a great list. They're very responsive and generally nice people. So I'm just going to talk three things. So why, what, and how. Those are pretty easy to understand. So the first one is why. And I think they kind of need to be in that order. So you need to know why you should do something. And then you need to know what that thing is. And then you need to know how you can actually do something with it. So why is why would you... here's the biggest. So everybody here has used a relational database or good enough that they have some idea, and we've only had a few people use Docker databases and stuff like that. Don't be afraid to raise your hands, okay? So the first thing that everyone talks about when they talk about document databases, when they talk about relational databases in general, is that that relational databases don't scale. They don't scale. I don't know about you guys, but I honestly don't really care about scaling. I haven't, other than maybe Eli. But most people, you don't have to worry about thousands of inserts every second. I don't have to deal with that. So I don't really care about the scaling part of Mongo, but supposedly it does that really well. So just so you guys know that, it works really well. The next thing, so hammer and nail. So I'm young, so I don't know the whole history of relational databases, but I think it was maybe the 90s, or maybe it was even older than that. But everyone's been using the same thing.
The 1890s?
The 1890s. They've been using the same thing for 10, 20, 30 years. And I don't know about you, but all the problems have not been the same for 10 or 20 years. So the great thing about all the new databases that are coming out, the doc databases, the key value stores, any other name that they might come up for one of those two that is different, and the relational database, the great thing about them is that they solve different problems. And everyone, even Chris just mentioned it, there's Twitters going around right now, MongoDB versus CouchDB inserts, 2 seconds versus 29 seconds. And they're completely different. There's no point in really comparing them other than that MongoDB is awesome and CouchDB sucks. But there's nothing. So hammering out. So everybody has different needs, and they have different problems, and there's different solutions for those problems. And that's what makes different databases great, is because if your problem is different and relational, you don't need to have all that relational, you don't need to have ACID. Does everyone know what ACID is? Transactions and all that kinds of crazy stuff. So if you don't need all that stuff, then why do you have to have it? Why do you have to have overhead? Why not have it be a little bit faster and a little bit cooler and stuff like that? So examples. So I do best with examples. So Harmony is something Steve and I are working on. It's a website content management system. And you might ask, why would anyone want to build another one of those? But we would say because no one's done it right yet. And one of the things we ran into, one of the things we started doing is everything that's in a website is a piece of content, and it has custom things on that piece of content. So if you think about a blog post, like Garrett just showed, a blog post, everything anywhere in the website has a title and it has a URL. You have to have those two things. But then from there, any page could be any number of different things that make up that whole piece. And what we've kind of ended up doing is bending MySQL around to be a key value in parts, because we want to be able to query on that data and some of those things. And I hadn't heard of MongoDB when we started it. So the example is we have templates. Templates are HTML, all that kinds of stuff. Templates have fields. Fields are things like text fields, text areas, selects, assets, pick which would be a file upload, stuff like that. And then based on what you pick for fields for that template, when you go in to make content and you choose that template, or that template is automatically chosen for you, you see a different form to fill out. So as a content person, you don't have to know how this is going to look. You just have to know how to put your data in. So we ended up with keys and values everywhere, all over the place. So I started thinking, okay, this sucks because we're using a text column, a huge, big, huge text column in MySQL to store all this data. And sometimes there's like a one in that data, like literally the number one is like true or false. Or maybe sometimes there's true in that, or sometimes there's like five characters in this big text column. And whatever size it is, we have to allocate the biggest size so that it can grow from the start. We can't just let it grow as it grows, you know? So I started looking around, started looking at Couch, and Couch is really cool, but for some reason my brain never wrapped around it. So I was like, MapReduce, that's awesome. And Garrett gave a really simple, like, I give him props for that, because like I've read a million MapReduce articles on, you know, stuff, and I'm always like, okay, like what's, like, tell me what's the point really. So I guess the biggest, you know, if we're gonna talk about Travis City and MongoDB in the same night, the biggest difference that you can take away, the one thing, is static queries and static, okay, so like CouchDB is static queries with dynamic schemas. So it's like you can have any field in there, but the queries are defined up front. Relational databases are dynamic queries, but you define the schema. MongoDB is like merging those two together. So that's like, does that make sense? Okay. So what is MongoDB? So if we have depth of functionality and we have scalability and performance, which we already said we don't care about scalability most of the time. So this is our little graph. So Memcache is something that is like, it is really scalable, really performant, but it has no functionality. It's just a key and a value, that's it. And it's mostly just used for caching, it's not persistent, those kinds of things. So then you have like key value stores, which add persistence to Memcache. So, you know, they have a little more functionality, but they're not quite as performant, not quite as scalable. Then you have like MySQL and Postgres and Oracle and whatever the other things are, relational databases that have, they can do anything you want to do, but they might not be as scalable and performant, you know? So things are going to be a little bit taken out of that. And then you have MongoDB, which is basically like, it doesn't have everything RDBMSs have, so these are typically always ACID, they always have transactions. You're guaranteed, like, you know, when your data goes in, it's going in exactly the way you want it. You can do all this crazy stuff to make sure foreign keys stay the same and this kind of stuff. MongoDB says, that stuff's great, but most of the time we don't need that, and that just makes everything slow, because every time stuff goes in, it has to go through all these checks. So MongoDB just ripped all that stuff out. So there's no transactions. There's a lot of things like that that you can't do. So if those are a big deal, you can leave. So MongoDB, what they try to strive for is not necessarily like this would maybe be like a worthy goal, but they're like, no, we're going to add even more functionality and make it more performant and just really have it be a great solution out there. So that's kind of like MongoDB. So it's built for speed. It's document and collection oriented. I'll explain that. It has dynamic queries and indexes. It doesn't use, it has MapReduce JavaScript functionality that you could do. It's not as performant as Couch's MapReduce, but it's probably acceptable. It has replication and failover, stuff like that built in, and like a lot of people in the, they're saying NoSQL is like the new movement or whatever, that's what they're calling it, and they're talking about, never mind, I don't know what I was going with that, it doesn't matter. What's Mongo great for? So Mongo is great for websites, which is why we started looking into it and why I've kind of fallen in love with it. It's great for caching. It has a thing called cap collections, which basically, you know, it's like you have a limit of 1,000, and when something new comes in, the 1,000th one goes off. So it's, you know, just a simple stack type thing. High volume, low value. So like Twitter. I love Twitter, so I high scalability, again, that's just a fancy word you can put out for people in corporate places. Storage of program objects in JSON. So, what is it not great for? Highly transactional, so if you have a banking system, don't use MongoDB. Ad hoc business intelligence. So what that means is like, it's kind of these two things together. So I mean, like data warehousing, stuff like that, it's not good for Mongo. And then problem requiring SQL. So obviously if you need to like join across tables, you can't do that. So you have to do that at the programming level. You have to pull the stuff in and then do it with your Ruby code. Installation, super easy. You just make a data directory, that's the default one. You can download, unzip the binary for OS X, MongoDB run inside of the bin directory, it just works. And then I have a screencast I made at RailsTips, and it covers this like towards the beginning. And I'll put these slides up somewhere in Twitter about it, so you can give these links. So database. So it has a concept of a database inside there. So in MySQL, you create a new database, and that's the one that you use for your app, and that's kind of how that works. Same thing in this. You can create a database, and the whole idea with mine would be a speed. So you know, one thing you can do to make things faster is to have less things in the same place. So a database is one way to kind of say, these things go together, these things don't. Couch has the same idea with database. You create a new database, that's where stuff goes. It's made up of collections. So this is the thing that Couch doesn't have. So Couch doesn't have a collection idea. So a collection is basically the same thing as a table. So a table is, you know, you guys are all familiar with it. It has, you know, rows in it, and it has columns that you define. The great thing about Mongo, though, is that there's no schema. You don't say, these are the columns that are in here. You say that at the app level instead of at the database level. So the great thing is like your schema, more or less, is kind of versioned with your code, because we all use version control. So think table, but with no schema. So it's literally, again, collection is just a way to say, these things go together, and whenever I'm looking for these things, I don't care about everything else. So let's make a smaller collection that we can pull through faster. So it's always, everything they do, every decision they make is always based on speed. And then, so grouping each top level. So each top level entity, like not each model, but each main core thing in your app would be a collection. So if you had users, articles, items, whatever, that kinds of stuff. And if any point in this whole thing you have any question, just raise your hand. I don't want to do like the whole collection or collection and do them all at the end. Just fire it off right now. Don't wait. So each top level thing is something, and then it's indexable by one or more keys. So you can actually index stuff to make it more performant when you need to pull stuff out, and you know that you're going to be pulling by that key a lot. So then each collection is made up of documents. So documents are just like a row in a database. So this really, so you have database, collection, document. And what really made things click for me with MongoDB is I'm like, I know how those work. Those work like, you know, database, table, and row. And when I went to Couch and I was like, where are my tables? You know, I went in and I'm like, well, where are my queries? Stuff like that. Like, I just, like, it's awesome. I think there's so many cool things about Couch, but that just, like, in my brain did not click. So this is why it really clicked for me. So they, documents automatically have, I think pretty much whether you want them or not, they have an underscore ID key, which you can either set to your own identifier as you consider it to be an identifier. It just has to be unique. Or they automatically have a shorter than a UUID type ID system that either will automatically come back from the database, or you can now on the client side generate it and put it in too. And then three options for relationships. So everything in your entire app, you're gonna have relationships all over the place. That's the way programming is nowadays. So they've kind of three ways of doing it. So the one that would be like everybody knows foreign keys. So everybody understands foreign key. We have article has a user ID. We have a users table, and whenever you insert an article, you automatically set user ID. And right now, in MongoMapper project, which I'm going to talk about in a little bit, that's how most of the relationships work. They literally work just like a foreign key type relationship would. So it's easy to understand. So then the two new ones are easy reference and embedded document. So an embedded document is like what Garrett was showing when he showed tags. So tags would be an embedded document, except for instead of just having tags, you would have a tag model, and that would have a key of a name that's a string, and then that would embed inside there as an array of tags. And so then whenever you pull that blog post out, you automatically have the tags with it. There's no SQL joins, there's nothing crazy to pull that stuff out, and so it just makes reads really, really quick. So reads aren't as fast in Mongo as in MySQL, but it doesn't matter because you're doing less joins, which means when you have lots of relationships in documents, you pull things out faster because you're not doing all the joins. So even though it's slower, if you just do a straight up find against, you know, you do a benchmark like that, it's foolish because it doesn't really matter, because the whole goal is changing how your schema works to make things faster. And then DB reference is like wicked cool idea, but not quite there. It's basically anyone worked in C, like plain old C, like pointers and stuff like that. I don't really remember C, but it kind of reminds me of my understanding in college of pointers. So pointers like point to another thing, but they're not really that thing. They just kind of are like point to that thing. Is that kind of right?
It's just an address in your key.
So
if you set up relationships like this on production, that, I mean, they can have some pretty serious implications on performance downstream later on, right? So is this kind of like permanently set once it's defined at your application level, or maybe how do you change it?
Oh, you can change it anytime. So that's the great thing. So if you start with foreign keys and you're like, all right, straight up, this is too slow, we need to embed this document, you know, so there's not the concept yet of like data migrations. Okay, so first off, if you do data in Rails migrations, don't. Like that usually ends up causing trouble anyways. So what I would typically do if I need to change my schema in Mongo's in production is I would do some kind of a rank task that would migrate the data. So it would be from that, pull it into the embedded documents and save them all in some kind of thing at night or something like that. And you can still leave the other ones over here. Maybe you just stop inserts for a little while. So I don't know. I mean, there's no rules. So that's where it gets kind of wild west every once in a while, which is fun. It makes you want to like rip off your shirt and show your burly chest hair. But it's also sometimes scary too. We'll get more into that. My chest hair, we'll get more into that. But
all right.
So you can look at this for a second while I take a drink. Okay. So, querying. So querying, like I said before, Couch is a static query that you like upload to your database that reminds you of a procedure or something. And then you have, you know, MySQL, which has all these dynamic queries, but the database is set up. So Mongo, you have dynamic queries, so you can query off of any key, all kinds of crazy things like that. But you also have a dynamic schema. So you can change at any point. You can have some documents that have tags, some documents that don't have tags. And I'm gonna show some polymorphic stuff a little later that will explain that and like is really cool. But so basically this would be like if you were running this in, so Mongo, I'm pretty much just gonna show you like Ruby stuff, but this is the one thing that is kind of like, Mongo is powered by JavaScript a lot in the back end, SpiderMonkey, so, which I just like to say. But so querying, so this would be like DB would be, you know, like your database, collection would be like your table name, and then find is the find method, and it's named just like ActiveDefender, which makes you feel fancy. And then the hash is you know, is JSON, which just looks very similar to a Ruby hash. So it's not scary. Again, I looked at it and I'm like, oh, that clicks, that makes sense. I understand that, I can comprehend it. So you can say first name John, and that'll find every document that, you know, has a first name John. First name that starts with capital J, and that's a regex. You can do case insensitive. It knows all kinds of, but it does all kinds of crazy regex stuff. It's probably slow. I don't know, use them, but I showed it anyways. It's cool. Underscore ID one. It's just like finding by ID, stuff like that. This is where it gets crazy. So it's like, oh, dollar. That reminds me of PHP. Ooh. But it's actually a good dollar. So you have age greater than 21. So dollar GT, can everyone see that or not? Okay, so dollar GT, there's all kinds of what are called operators like that. So because they use JSON, they use JSON, JavaScript object notation, to actually query, they don't have like or like greater than, equal, some of those things built in. You can do that, and I'll show like with the where, but you can't do it. So they add modifiers in that allow you to do that. So you can say age greater than 21, you can be greater than equal to, less than equal to. In, not in, all kinds of crazy things I'll show on the next slide, I think. And then you can actually, so I talked about embedded documents, so you can embed documents inside of other documents. So in this instance, we would have, let's say this would be for a post, and post has an author embedded in it, and author is a hash that, just like Garrett showed, that points, you know, there's hashes inside of arrays and all that. You can do the same things with Mongo. And actually, I should probably say this, so Couch stores everything in JSON, Mongo stores everything in BSON. So BSON is just JSON in binary form so that it's more compact and easier to send across the wire and stuff like that. So it's literally, like if you look at stuff, it's just like JSON. The only thing they do is they say, we want to make it a little bit smaller, again, make it a little bit faster, squeeze that last little ounce of power out. And then they also add a couple of new data types to JSON, like date, object ID, which is what the identifiers use, and then something else, but it's probably not important. So you can say, so this is embedded, author is embedded inside there, and then first name is embedded inside of author. So you can just picture like a nested Ruby hash. And so you can say author.firstname is John, and that's going to find all the documents that have an embedded document of author that have a first name named John. So you can query inside of those documents all the way in, which is pretty fun. And then the last thing I'll show on this one is you can actually do dollar where. So dollar where is like find by SQL with JavaScript. So you can say this is your collection. So this.age greater than or equal to 6 and this.age less than or equal to 18. And so that would do, you know, everything between the age of 6 and 18. And I think I called that like non-drinkers when I was doing the other presentation. I thought that was funny. So these are like all the modifiers. You have like in, not in, 9-inch nails, all, not equal, greater than or equal, less than, size. So size, like, whoa, what? Why size? Well, you can have arrays. So you might want to know where the array has more than three tags, or the array has, you know, more than four of this, which is pretty cool. And then fields, which is just like select in Active Record. So you don't want to pull back your documents. If you start embedding a lot of things, your document's going to get really big. You just want to pull back and list the titles and the URLs. You can say fields, title, URL, and it'll just pull back those two, and it'll be a lot more efficient. Then you have limit and offset for pagination. Again, it's just feeling like SQL. Sort. You can do ascending, descending. The only thing that's a little bit wonky, but I've fixed this in my mapper, is you know, if you want to sort by two things, you can foo, one for ascending, bar, negative one for descending. But I actually automatically convert ASC and DES, creature of habit, to negative one and positive one and all those things. So you don't actually even have to worry about it, but that's what happens. And then you can also do count. Count's built in automatically. And then group is built in. It's, I don't know if it's amazing, but it's the same way you would do like a group query in SQL. And then also MapReduce. This thing is awesome, I'm not gonna lie. So how? So I showed you why. Why is not everybody has the same problem. So sometimes if you're not having problems with a relational database, don't even look at the document stores and the evals. It doesn't matter. If everything you're going to do is working, don't worry about it. But if you're running into pain, then chances are you're trying to use a hammer with a screw or something else. So then we get to like what MongoDB is, you get a little bit of the background. So now how can I actually use it? So I'm not going to show you the JavaScript console shell, which they have. They have a mild REST interface for querying some things, but it's not very nice. I'm not going to show any of that stuff because I'm just going to show you what you can actually use. So we're Rubyists except for that guy. So I'll show you how to do it in Ruby. So, how do you do it in Ruby? So there's a MongoRuby driver, it's on GitHub. And then these are the three things that MongoDB team actually supports themselves. Active Record Adapter, I'm like, why? Like, why would you want to map a relational database ORM to a document database, which is totally different? So I didn't like that. And then I saw Mongo Record, which is another thing they made, which is a little more towards MongoDB, but it's still awkward. And I was like, I just don't really like these. And the Ruby driver alone is like, if you're just using like a MySQL driver in Ruby, it's like, no way. Like, there are certain things that I want. I want validations, I want, you know, callbacks, I want all those kinds of things. So I made a new mapper, or Mongo mapper is what I actually call it. But someone told me, I think it might have even been, was anybody? Wasn't you, no. It might have been Jerry, who sometimes I'm not here to call it that. But so Mongo is not MySQL, so I didn't like the other ones because they felt like they were trying to kind of shoehorn RDBMSs into Mongo, which is different. The DSL for modeling, that's a big, word, but you should learn Mongo as you're using the ORM for it. Like, it should teach you the Mongo things. It shouldn't hide that all in a perfect, you know, I mean, some of it should be hidden, but some of it should teach you so that you can realize, oh, I could do it this way, I could do it that way, you know. So there's, and then also it sounded fun, but I quickly realized after that one, and this is a new bullet from the last time I did this, major appreciation for people who do ORMs. It's a lot of hard work. If you want to learn and get really good at Ruby, build an ORM. Because there are so many things that you just totally take for granted. You have to learn about proxies, you have to learn about, that's really it, use proxies. there's a lot of things you have to learn about, and that I had never even thought about until I started doing it, and it just really gave me appreciation for how mature Active Record is, how mature DataMapper, SQL, all those kinds of ORMs. They give us so much out of the box. We really take it for granted, so snatch it up. So features, so type guessing. So Mongo understands all the Ruby types that you really need, integer, float, you know, string, regex, date, or daytime really together. All the things that Ruby kind of has, Mongo already understands it and speaks it, so if you pass it a number, it comes back as a number. The only problem is like, when you submit a form, everything's a freaking string. So you have to have typecasting of some sort in an ORM, which is the first thing I learned. I'll show how that works, but so you can actually kind of typecast stuff a little bit. So if you say something's an integer, it will either be nil or integer. So you know that that's going to happen. Callbacks, from just like ActiveMaker, I literally use Active Supports callbacks. So before save, after save, I implement all those things. I didn't realize how hard that would be either. It wasn't actually that hard, but it was kind of. Validations. There's a project called Validatable by Jay Fields, who used to be awesome in Ruby and post all this good stuff, and then left, and now he does action. A lesser calling. So Validatable, he made that originally, so I forked it and just really forked it. And I put in a bunch of Rails stuff, made it feel a lot more Railsy, a lot more Active Record-y. Connection and database in different per document. Most of the other projects that I showed before, like they have one connection and one database for everything. So it's like, what if I want to talk to another database that's somewhere else or with another connection? You just can't do that. But this is so you set up a default, like established connection in Rails, and then it automatically uses that, and then you can change it on a per document basis when you need to. And then create and update with single or multiple. And you're like, why does he list that as a feature? That's so easy. It's not. Delete and destroy, delete all, destroy all, find by ID, IDs, all, first, last. First and last are kind of shady in Mongo because you don't have a sequential number. So they have a thing called dollar natural, which is like supposedly like insert order, but they literally say on the website, like, this is not perfect. It's close. But when you're doing tests, and MongoDB is like insanely fast at inserting, and you're doing tests and you insert three records, and they all insert literally in like the same millisecond, like, it always fails the test. So a lot of people have been complaining to me that there's random failures, and there are random failures. But it doesn't matter for most of the time, because most of the time, you're not going to have to worry about inserts that are that rapid. And if they are, you probably don't care about the direct order that they happen in. So then, association. So this was, thankfully, some guy came along. I don't even know who he is. I still don't. He's a myth. But he threw in all the basics of, like, kind of like the Active Record proxy system. Has anyone looked at like the associations in Rails, like the actual source code? One guy has. Okay, two people. I'm sorry. it's crazy to understand if you haven't done any of that kind of stuff before. So again, this is where I learned a lot. So this guy kind of threw it in there. And it's like once it was in there, you kind of see it and react to it and make it awesome. And so now it's getting awesome, but it's still missing a lot of things. But it has like. On association, you can say find all, find first, all those kinds of things. You can say build, create. And just as I need things, I'm implementing them. So there's some stuff that's missing, but it was really fun to do, and now it like works, and I did it, and it's really cool. So I'll show some of that stuff. So an example. So I'll do this one. I'll let you soak that in. Okay. So the first thing you notice is I didn't do inheritance. So if you want to create a Mongo document, a document has its own collection. An embedded document doesn't have a collection. It has to be embedded in one of these in order for anything to work. So include Mongo Mapper document, and that basically gives it all the stuff that you need to actually work with it. That makes all the magic happen. The main reason I did it is because I did it on like Happy Mapper, another project that I was playing with, and HD Party, and a couple of those that I made. And I don't really remember why. I think I was copying Data Mapper, and then, like, because you learn by copying and stuff like that. And I just kind of like it better. So, no inheritance. So, when you inherit stuff, it actually just does inheritance kind of like normal Ruby objects. There's nothing to start with. So, you're not locked in to start with. So, that's kind of cool. So, class user include Mongo Mapper document. Key. So, key is how you define your schema. So, it's like a column, except that it's dynamic and on the fly. So I say key name string required true length 5 to 100 key email string required true index true. So the first one obviously this adds validates presence of and it adds validates length of within 5.100. So this one adds validates presence of and it adds ensure index, which is a call that happens when the model loads and it ensures the bad index exists in the Mongo collection that you're dealing with. So user automatically has a users collection just like MySQL or like Active Record, all that stuff. Wherever it made sense to stick like Active Record, I stuck like Active Record because I like Active Record. the most part. PH, integer, numeric, true, so that's going to validate that it's actually a number what came through. Default, true for a Boolean. Address, an address is an embedded document. So you can have a key that is an embedded document, or you can say many articles. So articles could be an embedded document, or it could be a regular document. If it was a regular document, then the associations are smart, and they say, this is a regular document, so I'll use foreign key lookups to do that. And if it's an embedded document, so if I said many addresses, it would automatically use the address class, just like Active Directory. And when you said, you know, addresses.build, it would build an address and add the scoping and stuff like that. When you actually saved it, it would save it inside of the document, and all that good stuff. So that kind of makes sense. So it's really similar to, there's a couple things that are similar to DataMapper. They say like property, but that's like, you have no idea how lazy I am. And property is like at least four or five more characters than key. And so I was like, I'll go with key. I almost went with K, but I was afraid people wouldn't get it. So, and then, you know, I'm like, many articles. Like, why do I have to say has many? Like, I know it has them, so I just want to say many. I'm lazy. So all those length, I don't think there's anything interesting here, really. The difference really is just one's document, one's an embedded document. So then this, so, and I'm actually going to show some code for this. So I'm just going to show you some of the tests from MongoMapper. Keyboard assistant. So these are, do I need to bump the font size up or is that good? So class address is an embedded document, you know, message. So let's look at like message and then room. So this is pretty cool. So I have a message document, it has a key of a body, that's a string, and it belongs to a room. If anybody comes up with a better one, I'm trying to think of a better name than belongs to that's maybe shorter, but I haven't one yet, so I went with belongs to for now. I was almost thought like owner, but nobody's digging that. So message, room. So room would be like, is kind of the parent thing. So then room has many messages. And I say polymorphic true. So this is where it gets kind of fun. This is, so you have many to many, and you have many to many embedded. So the difference between those two is that many embedded actually go into the document. Many to many don't go into the document. They're stored in different collections. Does that make sense? Okay. So this is a many to many document, not embedded. So I have room, key name, messages many, polymorphic true, and I have class message. So this is kind of like the base class for the polymorphic stuff. In Rails, you guys use polymorphism, like, you know, where you have does anyone have caffeine? This is a kind of a cool lab. So now it won't go off again. So you have a message, belongs to room, and then I just made enter, exit, and chat messages. And I just inherited from message, and that's it. And then it'll automatically store underscore type with those things. Right now, it actually, when you say polymorphic true, it actually adds underscore type as a key to message. I'm thinking about making that explicit, so you have to actually put key underscore type string, because I think that's maybe a little too much magic. It also causes some issues with loading, but that's another issue. That's one of the things we learned with ORMs. Go ahead.
So if you wanted to add in a special field to something like the enter message,
Then
you just put it in that one model, and it doesn't muck anything else up?
Exactly. So let's say we wanted this to automatically, before save, set, message. We did private def save. Why is escape not working? Oh, set. Private. We could say like self.message equals, you know, like who entered the room. So that would only happen on before save of the enter message.
Okay, and adding extra keys, they're the same deal.
If you add the keys, they only get added to this one. If you add the keys to this, they automatically propagate to all the subclasses. Which is another thing I learned. Ruby's dynamic, but it's not perfectly dynamic. I thought it was, but so like I guess when you define a key, that gets stored in what's called a class instance variable, not a class variable. So does anyone know the difference? There's a post on Railsteps, but basically class variables, when you inherit and you change it in a lower one, it changes the upper one. So basically, it's like a global variable inside of a class, which is bad. So class instance variable will actually kind of inherit, you can make it inherit all the way down and then override at each level. But if you change the class instance level of the parent after you've inherited. So if I did class enter message right here, and then down below it, I said like the message, I reopen the class and I put another key in, that doesn't automatically go into all the subclasses. It's a funky thing. And learned it the hard way. And so what I actually do is keep track of subclasses whenever you inherit, and anytime you add a key, it propagates to all the subclasses. So if you inherited like five levels down from message, it would literally do like a little like slinky down to all of them propagating keys. So you still get that key everywhere, but that was one thing that I had to learn. How dare you walk out on me. So let's get back to it. So class message, we have enter, exit, and chat. So you could say room.message, or room.messages, and what's that called? A double, you'll know what I mean. So like, finding like room.create, is like name. Ooh. Like all that kinds of stuff, that automatically will set the underscore type and all those kinds of things. So you can literally have all of these. I mean, it's not a whole lot different than the polymorphic stuff in Rails, but where it gets really cool is when you do, I'm gonna control Z all this, command Z all this stuff, but where it gets really cool is when you do embedded documents, because you can actually have, so if I go down, okay, so here's another example. So we have a catalog. Catalog is a document. So catalog has its own collection, and it has many medias. Now notice that I didn't have to say like embedded true or anything like that. Like it knows that medias goes to media, and media is an embedded document, so it just knows to do all that stuff for you. So you don't have to worry about any of that crap. But I said polymorphic true. So media has video, image, and music. So media has file that they all share. Video has a length. This kind of goes to what you were talking about. Image has a width and a height, music has a bit rate. And when I say, catalog.new, name it, and then I say catalog.medias or whatever, you can name associations something different and pass a different class name, all that stuff like Rails. But when you add those on, then they actually get saved in the catalog. So if you need to pull out that catalog and all of the stuff that's inside of it, it's just one query, that's it. Just one query, never have to worry about it. The only downside is you can't get the stuff inside of it out like by itself as easy. So it's kind of slower. So when you embed a document inside of another document, it's faster to pull that whole document out. It's slower if you need to get all the insides of all the main documents. So that's kind of the trade-off. Does that make sense? Am I explaining that? Okay. So those are some examples. You can do, I have like pet is an embedded document, real person. I mean, these are just some examples. These are straight out of the test. You can, modularize all the stuff and it works. So transport is an embedded document, and then car, bus, ambulance, and hair from that, and then fleet, does all that. And again, showing the class name with the all that kinds of stuff. And all that stuff, I mean, it just works. So like I have functional tests. So I can say like the many proxy, should work with destroy all, unassociating documents, all those kinds of stuff that you would kind of want to work and expect to work, it almost works. So it's in a pretty usable state. I'm trying to find like a good, this was kind of fun. So like just breaking it down some Ruby. So a few people have looked in associations and Rails. So like in the associations, the SQL is crazy. So they're doing the ridiculous stuff to merge all the SQL together. So like literally when I apply scope, when I say like, grab all of the documents scoped to this parent. So like when I say room.messages.findAll, it's got to pull all the messages with the room ID. That is literally just a hash merge. Like I just take the one hash and I merge my scope on top of it. So if they pass in something stupid, I don't let them mess it up. And it's actually a deep merge. It's a good deep merge. So that is actually like, where's some scoped options? That was a partial Anchorman reference for those that enjoy. There we go. So literally that's it. So this is all the code right here to apply associations in Mongo Mapper. So it's like millions of lines of SQL and ActiveDirectory, and it's like one line of active support deep merge, which I had never heard of. I actually went out and found this deep merge gem and I was all excited. And does anyone know Jesse Newland from Rails Machine, or heard the name Rails Machine? Okay. Well, I was like, dude, I found this deep merge gem. It does all these crazy deep merges. And he's like, oh, sweet. Is that like Active Support's deep merge? I was like, so read the manual. So yeah, and like apply scope. I mean, all I do is I ensure that the owner of the thing is saved, you know, send the foreign key equal to that. So that stuff kind of all works. So I talked about DB references earlier. So most of this stuff is all foreign key stuff. So the one thing that's cool about DB references is they literally are the document in the other collection embedded inside of yours. And whenever it updates over here, it automatically updates here. So why wouldn't I use those for everything? Well, you can't query inside of a DB reference. You can query whether the DB reference exists. So like you can get all the IDs that are DB referenced, but you can't actually query like inside of those documents. So it kind of like mooted this awesome Mongo high that I had, but then it kind of came back around and I'm okay with it. So, but the cool thing about DB references is it's perfect for belongs to. So right now, you know, belongs to, so like let's say you have room, you have message belongs to room. When you got all the messages out, like you just want to find all the messages, and you each one you said like message dot room, you know, like normally in Active Record, if you don't say like include room or something like, or do some kind of join, you're going to do a query, you know, for each n plus one or whatever the fancy people call it, query for each one of those things when you call the room for that thing. Now they added some caching stuff, they did a lot of stuff like that, but the great part about DB references, and I haven't implemented it yet, but I'm actually going to use, I'm going to store, so like let's say with the room and the message, so message would actually have a room underscore ID and a room underscore reference. And so whenever you change, it would change both of them automatically. But the cool part is that you would never have to do a query to get that out. So if you wanted to get like the room for a message, you would just say message.room and it would do no extra queries. That would just automatically come back, all the attributes would just feed in. And so that's one thing that I'm going to add that'll be a real nice optimization. So you'll never have to include stuff. Go ahead.
Recently, I was running into a problem where having something like an identity map for objects would have been really useful. And it looks like they're simply not going to even bother doing that for Active Record. But it sounds like what you were just talking about gets a long way towards that. Is that something that you've played around with, the idea of an identity map for these objects once you wrap them?
Explain identity map.
Anytime that you're referring to a particular document, I guess, then regardless of how you got there, it would actually refer to the same object. So
okay.
Think of it as a different layer of references to your object space, I guess.
I haven't even thought about it.
Okay.
It sounds cool, but yeah, I'd have to read about it and like understand it a little bit, or have someone patch it.
DataMapper also does that for all their stuff.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay, then so there I can still code, so that's even better.
It's kind of crazy if you're not used to having identity. Like, you modify the room in one of these things, and it modifies the room in all of them. And if you're not used to that, it's pretty bad for applications, but not designing that style.
No, I mean, for my case, it's going to be the kind of thing that I run into frequently, because the paths to those records frequently don't sort of come from the same place. And so in the Active Record, you end up doing different lookups. And although it'll hit the cache multiple times, you're not actually dealing with the same Ruby
object. The exact
object,
same
right?
Ruby object. Got
right.
It. Okay.
Right.
Now
and so, you know, when you run into that, and you know, you can run into this in different places, like with mocking frameworks. If you mock something on some reference that you've dug out of some object that you want to pull out for a setup, then the mock may not actually be there when you process it, going through other methods or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, for the work that we're doing, that ends up being really kind of annoying and problematic because you don't get any of the benefits really of a cache.
So it's like if you had eight messages, they all had the same room, but one of them you changed the name of the room and you haven't saved it yet. Ideally, you want that change to be in all of them right away.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wanted to modify it. And they did this a lot with Smalltalk because you just had one image, and so anytime you were referring to that object, you went through the global reference table, and then you were just looking at that actual chunk of data.
That sounds awesome.
I don't think there's like a plug-in out there for Active Record that does add that in.
Because
the way those associations work, you could sneak it in pretty easily.
Well,
there's a couple of they're starting to sneak some of that in. I remember seeing them I remember seeing it recently. I'm trying to spit it out, but seeing where they do that kind of thing with acupuncture. I think it went to, like, Wendacore or something recently. It's just one of them does it.
Yeah, someone pitched it, and but what they were doing is just a straight up hash, and yeah. So it's not. Like, it gets you a lot of the things that an identity map would do, but there's still ways to end up screwing yourself.
Yeah. So, but Datamapper does it, supposedly?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, as far as I've used Datamapper, and Datamapper's a little bit better because it knows more, it collects more data about the fields it has and it doesn't have. And so that's where you really run into problems, like, if you select one object, or you get one object with half the fields, and you get another object over here with a different half of the fields, does it really connect those?
I see.
And that's where it really gets, you know, problematic or tricky. I think Datamapper does that part really well too, but
Datamapper also allows you to sort of selectively wrap the object, right? It doesn't do eager wrapping, which I think Active Record does. If you pull back an Active Record object, it wraps every field in there.
You mean like lazy loading?
Yeah, and so rather than doing sort of the equivalent of lazy wrapping, where you just got the raw record back and then process it as you need it, you know.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, I can do that.
I mean, potentially, actually, that relates to something else. You mentioned a couple times here that, doing sort of these deep queries, it's not as performant. And I was wondering at what level that is. If that's just in straight up Mongo, if it's once you pull it back and it's in the gem for wrapping things, or if it's because you're just not pulling as much data across the wire.
Okay, it's actually in Mongo. So what I was trying to, I probably didn't explain it very well, but so if you have like deeply nested embedded objects, that's fine. Like you can query within those, like dynamic and normal fine query inside mm-hmm. and get back to documents and all that kind of stuff. What I was speaking of more for when it's not performant is if you have those embedded objects and you want to say like let's say message was embedded, each message was embedded inside of the room, and you wanted to say like just give me all the messages across all rooms, that's really slow. Because they're all embedded inside. So you have to literally iterate over every document and pull those all together. And they have some MapReduce stuff, like that's how Couch gets around it. They use MapReduce. So they have some MapReduce stuff in, and you can literally do full JavaScript functions and all kinds of stuff inside of Mongo, but it's not a huge priority right now because they're kind of aiming on some different things. So that's, does that explain that better?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, it's a Mongo thing, but it's more of like a embedded versus not embedded kind of thing. So it's not the deep references, it's mostly the pulling all the inside things out instead of pulling the outside things in. Okay, anything else? Go ahead.
Is there any possibility in the future that this sort of database, since it's based in JavaScript, could be run on the client side?
Yeah, so I actually kind of want to make a REST interface for it. Go ahead.
I do too.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, then Chris will do it. I think it'd be really fun to have a REST interface and like a JavaScript client. There was somebody posting on the list today. The list is really active. MongoDB-user Google group. And it's really active. I mean, there's literally like 15 to 30 things a day, which seems active to me. But yeah, they were talking about that today.
I don't want a client-side MongoDB.
Like
something that actually query JSON in the browser like that. Other than JSON query, but something much nicer like Mongo.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's more what I was speaking of.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can. Yeah. There's a couple of databases that do that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Persevere, and there's another one.
Any local store, being able to query that in the same fashion, like what you're doing with MongoDB.
Yeah. If you wanted to do that with MongoDB, so what he's saying is, so from the client, from like your JavaScript and HTML app, being able to query the database, post, delete, all those kinds of things. So that's the awesome thing about Couch, is that Couch is all web, it's all HTTP, it's all port 80 or whatever you want to run it on, but so it's all accessible via the web. So if it's on the same domain, domain applies, right?
Yeah.
So if it's on the same domain, you can query the Couch database straight from JavaScript. You don't even need any kind of driver like at the Ruby level or at any of those kinds of things. You can literally query straight. So you can actually make a Couch app that is stored in Couch. So because Couch can serve HTML files and it can serve JavaScript files and stuff like that. So you can build, they're called Couch apps, and you can actually build an app with Couch, inside of Couch, and it runs inside of Couch, and it replicates inside of all the crazy. So there's some cool stuff there, but it's just it's Meta, but it's but yeah. Mongo doesn't have that.
Yeah.
So Mongo says, so HTTP is not fast. It's fast enough for the most part, but it's not fast for like doing these kinds of connections. So they go down as far as they can. They have native drivers for each language. And then for Ruby, they even have a C extension that if you have it installed, it'll the Ruby pure Ruby version will automatically use that C extension if it's installed. So they literally go for like pure speed wherever they can. But there are people working on like a REST interface around Mongo, literally just a REST piece that sits in front of it. So you can talk REST to it and it talks, you know, TCP or whatever the level down there is that they talk to directly to Mongo.
I was thinking more one step, eliminate the AJAX part of it, eliminate any REST, all of it would be not on the browser side. The Mongo, you would actually be running a Mongo type.
I'm thinking like HTML5.
Like
local
exactly. session store or even a DB, I guess.
Okay. I wasn't as far down the hole as you. Okay, so all that stuff, that's cool. I think that's all I'll talk about for that. And then I'll close with the last little bit. Okay, random awesomeness. So I talked about cap collections for a sec, but it's literally like, if you want to do caching, it's a great way to do caching. So I mean, like in Memcache, you know, Memcache has a certain amount that you can store. When you push something in and it goes over the limit, it pushes the bottom off. Least, there's a term
least
for it.
Recently used?
Yeah,
yep.
LRU. So it's basically least recently used, and order is guaranteed in this. So I talked about natural order not really being guaranteed in normal collections. Use a cap collection, it is guaranteed, but it just won't be there forever. So the order's great, but eventually that document will go away. So this is great, but if you want to cache like some big tree of, you know, a whole site or something like that, you can do that. And you literally, like a lot of people are saying, you don't need Memcache in between MongoDB and your app because Mongo is fast enough that it doesn't really matter. And because you can cache inside of it. So Mongo, when it stores stuff, it actually, Couch does most of its caching. You can put like Squid and Varnish and like all these proxy caches in front of Couch, which is kind of cool. You can use HTTP caching for like caching. Mongo actually does like memory maps. So it uses as much RAM as the system will allow it to map all the objects together. So that's where it gets a lot of speed from. So as much as it can keep in memory, the more memory you have, the faster Mongo will run. I mean, it really helps it a lot. And the one thing that I want to make sure I say before I forget is don't use it with 32-bit systems because you can only store like 2 or 4 gigs of data. It's something to do with ints, and computer science people that are smarter than me know, understand it, but just remember 32-bit, no. 64-bit, yes. So 64-bit, there's no limits for Mongo at all. Upsert. So upserts, literally you can update a document in place without pulling the whole thing down. So like if you've ever heard of like Finder Create By or all those kind of things, you don't need them. So I actually have Finder Create By in Mongo Mapper, and eventually, and actually right now, it does save, which does an upsert. So if you say Finder Create By in Mongo Mapper, it actually just passes in the ID, and then passes in the object. And if it's not there, MongoDB creates it. If it is, then it just updates it, so which is pretty cool. But so you can update the whole document, which is what Finder Create By is doing. And then you can also update just specific things using modifiers like ink. There's also push if you want to push something up. Has anyone seen Redis? No? A little bit? Hey now, Redis is really cool because Redis has its key value with custom data structures. So it's not just key value, it's key and like a few, so you get like arrays, sets, you know, stuff like that. But it's all in memory, so you can only have as much storage as you have memory. So it's lightning fast, persistent, on top of the storage and memory, but you can only have like enough as your RAM, so that's kind of cool. But with what I was trying to get at with Redis, you can actually do like pushes, pops, intersections, all those kinds of things at the database level instead of doing them at like the Ruby level, which is really cool. And you can do that a little bit with Couch too. So like if you're building a stack tracker, you can say like $ink, you know, views 1, and it'll increment for views by 1. And you don't have to pull down that whole document, increment it, and then push it back up. Which is really awesome. And then there's upserts, repserts. Repserts are like the place. It's a horrible name, but that's kind of what they do. And then multi-keys. So think tagging and full-text search. So in the example of the blog that Garrett showed, you would just put an index on tags, and it would automatically say, oh, tags is an array, so I'm going to index each element in the array, not just the whole thing. So then you can say, like, when you say $in, or you say $all, or you say $any, or things like that, to find arrays that match those kinds of things, it actually does an index search on them, which is a lot faster. So that's kind of cool. So some people have done full text searching by, if you have like content as a key, they do like underscore content as another key, and that's an array, and that is literally a split on the space, and then it's indexed. And so you can actually do kind of like fake full text searching, which is kind of fun, and it's pretty efficient. So that's kind of a fun thing. There's actually the same guy who made associations, or the first part of associations, he has a full text search that does like a stem search, which I never even really looked at stemming before. But so every word in English stems from a word. So if I have running, it stems from run. If I have, you know, you get the idea. I was gonna go to pooping next, but I don't have anything. So run, it would store the stem of it instead of the whole thing. So it would just store run or just store other words. And then that's pretty cool. He has a plugin, that's what I was getting at, for MongoMapper, that actually does like simple full text searching, storing things in like underscore keyword type fields, and then does stem stuff on top of it. So it's an interesting idea. I didn't pull it into the master because I don't want to force people to use a certain way of search. So he also has GridFS and AutoStruggers. So this is something I didn't even talk about earlier, but so GridFS is like literally a file system in Mongo. Before I get to that, so GridFS is like, so file storage sucks. I mean, it's a pain. So you got to back it up. How do you back it up? If you start to get like this ridiculous amount of files, and like, oh, just put it on S3. Well, then S3 goes down. There's all these things like that you have to deal with file storage, and it's not fun. If you have something that's small, like 4K, something like that, you can just store it as a key in Mongo as binary, like you could in MySQL or something like that, and it just works and it's fine. But GridFS is actually, it's not implemented in MongoDB, it's a spec that the MongoDB team wrote and that they all the drivers adhere to. And it's basically a way to chunk files across documents and quickly merge them together so that you can actually store files like a file system into GridFS. And it's actually cool, like the MongoRuby driver, you say like, GridFS like file.open and then the name and then like plus W or like, you know, R or like, it's just like working with files in Ruby, except for it gets stored in Mongo across multiple documents and then pulled back together when it comes out. So the great part is you don't have to worry about backing up two different things, like your database and your file system. You can just store your files in your database and, oh, that sounds horrible, but don't worry, it's not that horrible. And it's pretty cool. And the really cool thing is one of the guys is actually making an Nginx plugin that reads directly out of GridFS. So you actually don't even have to go to the app level to get that file out anymore. So it'll...
Why is it splitting it up, you know, when it could just store the entire document in there?
It's mostly for performance reasons. Like, I don't remember why. If you look at their site, I think they go into details why. Okay. But the reason they split it up across documents is because... there's a certain level where documents are like, okay, so when you insert a record, they allocate space for it. So one of the things that freaks people out right away is like, they start up MongoDB and they insert one document and their database is 2 gigs. And they're like, whoa, I've got a 2 gig document. Like, no, it's not 2 gig document. They allocate space in reasonable amounts, in like 2 gig or doubling amounts, so that it gets faster for them when they need that space. So the reason they split it across is something to do with how they allocate the disk space, I believe. I'm just trying to sound smart.
I like how you went from text fields use too much disk space to it allocates 2 gig at a time, but that's cool.
it's related, but I can't remember exactly how. It's basically like, you know, like when you store a document, they assume, like they say, okay, here's the document, I'm going to give it a little bit of space to grow. And so that document never moves on disk. It's always on disk in your hard drive in the exact same spot until it grows bigger than that allocated space. When it grows bigger than that, then they actually move it on disk. So they have to do like seeks and all the, you know, hard disk failure move, all that kinds of stuff. So when they do that, it's slower. So they allocate the space. And I think
that makes sense why they would chunk it.
Yes.
So that way, if you're just appending to it, you actually only need to move a small amount of data.
Yes. Thank you. I knew it was related. So that's CritFest. So eventually, literally, you store all your files in Mongo with all your data. When you do a backup, you do, you know, or you replicate, which would make it easier than backing up, or what, I don't know what you do, but you do that kinds of stuff. You have to do it in one place. You don't have to worry about backing up files and all those kinds of crazy things. And then literally, you can serve them straight from Nginx instead of actually having to like go into. Has anyone ever done that? So a request, you know, you make like an images controller, and then it like sends data and that kind of stuff. We actually have to do that in order to protect some files in Harmony and stuff like that, and it sucks. So this is another reason why I started looking at it, because CritFS sounds like this glorious heaven in the sky of perfect file storage. And then auto sharding, I don't really know or care about sharding, but some people do. So it's scheduled for. I said shard. You can laugh. Some of you in the back. But, so. Auto sharding is, you know, where you automatically split on some key instead of different servers, and it does all that. It's kind of like weak right now, but supposedly in the future it's going to be like really, really awesome. So I think in the next quarter or two, it's going to be so. And then I got a whole couple of links, so a bunch of articles I wrote about it. The speech guys, they're actually who introduced me to Mongo at RailsConf. So I was at RailsConf, I went to sit down at a table, and I said hi, and they said hi, and they're talking, and they're like, check out MongoDB, and I was like, oh yeah, okay. And then I checked it out, and I literally like, couldn't leave the website for like a week. I was so enthralled with it. And then MongoDB.com and Tengen, so history, Tengen's a company that sponsors MongoDB, so they actually have commercial support, I think, and stuff, which is kind of cool. So Tengen is building like this like Google App Engine